This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wahib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
This year in this election, I'm asking you to join me to reject cynicism and reject fear and to summon what is best in us to elect Hillary Clinton as the next president of the United States and show the world we still believe in the promise of this great nation.
That was President Obama speaking last night at the Democratic National Convention in support of Hillary Clinton. Details coming up.
Also, German Chancellor Angela Merkel rejects calls to reverse her refugee policy and more reports of war crimes by government soldiers in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, President Barack Obama addressed the Democratic National Convention last night, firing up the crowd to support Hillary Clinton for president. Mr. Obama and other top Democrats sharply criticized Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. Their speeches signaled an intense and likely negative general election campaign to come. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Philadelphia.
President Barack Obama once again center stage at a Democratic National Convention.
I love you back.
Obama came to speak on behalf of his one-time political rival, Hillary Clinton, who now hopes to succeed him in the White House. But first, the president set his sights on Republican Donald Trump.
He's just offering slogans, and he's offering fear. He's betting that if he scares enough people, he might score just enough votes to win this election. And that's another bet that Donald Trump will lose. And the reason he'll lose it is because he's selling the American people short.
In making the case for Hillary Clinton, Obama said no one was ever better prepared to be president or to bring the country together.
This year, in this election, I'm asking you to join me to reject cynicism and reject fear and to summon what is best in us to elect Hillary Clinton as the next president of the United States and show the world we still believe in the promise of this great nation.
That was followed by a passing of the torch moment that sent delegates into a frenzy of celebration. Democrats also paid an emotional tribute to Vice President Joe Biden, and Biden wasted little time in tearing into Trump.
A man who seeks to sow division in America for his own gain and disorder around the world. A man who confuses bluster with strength. We simply cannot let that happen as Americans.
Also Wednesday, Democrats formally nominated Virginia Senator Tim Kaine to be Hillary Clinton's vice presidential running mate. And Kaine signaled he is ready for a tough campaign ahead.
Our nation, it is just too great to put it in the hands of a slick-talking, empty-promising, self-promoting one-man wrecking crew.
As for Donald Trump, he was also active on the campaign trail Wednesday, launching a new round of attacks on Clinton using his familiar nickname of Crooked Hillary. But Trump also sent shockwaves when he called on Russia to try and find missing emails from Hillary Clinton during her tenure as Secretary of State.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
Trump's comments sparked a fierce reaction from speakers at the Democratic Convention, including former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, and from former Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns, who spoke to VOA.
It's un-American. It's a betrayal of our interests and values. It's extremely unwise for Trump to say this.
Democrats now look forward to what for many will be the highlight of the week, Hillary Clinton's historic acceptance speech on Thursday as the first woman presidential nominee of a major U.S. political party. Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Thank you, Jim. The DNC reaches its climax tonight with Hillary Clinton's historic acceptance speech as the first woman presidential nominee of a major U.S. political party. Her daughter, Chelsea Clinton, will formally introduce her mother to the convention. Our colleague Vincent McCourty is at the gathering in Philadelphia with a preview of what's ahead tonight. I first asked him if the Democratic Party is more unified today than it was a few days ago, considering the convention started with controversy over emails.
Well, I have to say that Debbie Wasserman's Schultz email issue seemed to have fizzled out as soon as the speeches began. Up to this point, you get a sense that the party is more united and willing to stand strong against the Republican nominee. All the party luminaries have spoken and made a case for Hillary. You saw former President Bill Clinton, Vice President Joe Biden, President Obama, Mayor Bloomberg, Bernie Sanders himself. All of them have called for unity within the party. And from the reaction inside the arena, you get a feeling that the Democratic Party is intact and ready to go against Donald Trump.
What does Hillary Clinton need to do tonight to prove to those people who still see her as untrustworthy that she can be trusted?
So Hillary will focus on what she's done throughout her life. Of course, the husband captured that so well when he gave the speech the other day. But she will talk about the things she has done, the people she has met, the leadership she has shown during times of crisis, and make a contrast with Mr. Donald Trump, who, of course, has not held any public office, has not been seen to have served the ordinary people, worked with the ordinary simple folk. She will just kind of make sure that she highlights all the great qualities that she possesses and all the great things she's done as a public servant, as a Secretary of State, and just restore that trust in her without reminding people of the email scandal or of the Benghazi crisis.
How will she respond to her opponent Donald Trump's accusations that she is a liar and also his offer to Russia to hack into the U.S. government's computer systems?
I think the call by Mr. Trump for Russia to hack into the U.S. system was a gift to Hillary Clinton because it gives them an opportunity to show that this is a guy who has an admiration for Russia and the leadership there, and that this is a person who doesn't really value the leadership in this country, a person who can call for a foreign country that is not friendly to the U.S. to actually engage in cyber attack against a fellow American is a person that cannot be trusted with the presidency of this nation. In fact, she will use this opportunity to show that Donald Trump is a liar on every front, is a fearmonger, and is a person who misrepresents what the United States is all about. She will once again reiterate that the United States is a great nation, does not need to be made great again, that Donald Trump is peddling lies and fear and should not be trusted to be the president of this country.
What is her next step after the convention?
She hits the campaign trail in earnest. She will go out there to now counter Mr. Trump. Trump has been out since the Republican National Convention ended. Now Hillary will go out there, speak to the ordinary citizens in different parts of this country. And you can say she will have an opportunity to remove her gloves without the necessary discipline of the conventions here and play the usual game of winning this election until November comes. She begins a campaign after this convention immediately.
My colleague Vincent McCourty at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel says she firmly rejects calls to reverse her policy to welcome refugees. AFP reports Merkel made the statement following a series of fatal attacks in the country. She says those who launched the attacks wanted to undermine Germany's sense of community, openness, and willingness to help people in need. Also, media reports say the U.S. State Department has warned Malta it needs to do much more to combat human trafficking. The State Department says Malta is a source country and a destination country for sex and labor trafficking. It says Malta has yet to meet the minimum standards for addressing the problem. In related news, a new migrant awareness campaign has been launched. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about the campaign.
The International Organization for Migration has joined the Italian government in a new campaign called Aware Migrants. And this is quite an interesting campaign launched to give migrants more information about the risks they face so that they can make informed decisions before they leave their countries of origin. And one of the themes is it is time to open your eyes. And this campaign is driven by the migrants themselves. They are telling their own stories of survival and abuse that they've suffered. And some of these stories are going to be featured on a new website called awaremigrants.org.
Did the IOM and Italian authorities explain how this program would be distributed in Africa, for example? How do they get the word out?
Well, they're going to use social media as much as possible. So through the website and through other social networks, they're going to be promoting video testimonies from migrants who are speaking out about their experience. They've also recorded audio testimonies gathered and recorded in Niger through smartphones. And those testimonies will be available for download from the website and also be broadcast on local radio stations. The video clips, incidentally, will be in English, French, Arabic, and also some local dialects with some subtitles. So some very powerful information here. And we saw some interesting video testimonies today. One migrant called Chamba from West Africa said in his video testimony, "It is a road that leads to hell." And he spoke about how he cried like a baby when the people smuggler that he was dealing with forced him, his wife, and his small baby to get on a boat in very stormy conditions with no regard for their lives, no concern about the future of his wife and child. So that gives you one example of one of the testimonies that was very powerful at the press conference today.
So this is obviously an attempt to slow the migration to Europe.
It's interesting that both the Italian government and the International Organization of Migration really wants to go to the source and really try and make people aware of the potential violence that they might suffer, the exploitation they might suffer. As they launched this campaign, they talked about the 3,000 migrants who've already died making that perilous journey from North Africa to try and reach Europe just this year.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
Coming up on 18 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Amnesty International says South Sudan government soldiers and their allies continue to commit human rights violations even after the signing of the August peace deal. In a new report called "We Are Still Running: War Crimes in Lier, South Sudan," Amnesty says documented reports of violence against civilians in Lier County could be war crimes. Ayan Bior has more on the story.
A man identified in the Amnesty report only as Maluth says soldiers shot and killed his brother, then came after his stepmother in her home and shot and killed her as well. He says government soldiers then took his sister and wife, forced them to the river and raped them. Then, Maluth told Amnesty, the soldiers burned their houses. Lama Faki, the senior crisis advisor for the Human Rights Watchdog, says they interviewed 71 people, and all of them had similar stories to tell of targeted violence against innocent civilians.
They would go into a village, they would loot property, they would force these women and girls that they had captured to carry the looted property for them back to their base or where they were positioned. They would use them for a few days, they would rape them, they would force them to cook and clean and tend cattle for them. And then in some cases, the women and girls found a way to escape. In other cases, the troops eventually let them go.
Faki says the most shocking finding is how widespread the practice was of targeting vulnerable individuals who were not soldiers. She says the occurrences documented by Amnesty are not isolated incidents, but are rather systematic attacks on villages and people trying to escape the violence. Faki says Lier County is a sparsely populated area, but no one was spared from the violence.
There was not a community under opposition control that we visited that was not affected by the violence. There was not an individual that we met who did not personally have a story about abduction and rape or knew someone intimately who had been abducted and raped. There was no one that we spoke with that had not lost a family member or a close friend in intentional attacks against civilian population.
Lul Rai, the Army spokesperson for the SPLA, downplayed the report's findings. Rai says that he does not deny that, in his words, one or two members of the Army raped civilians and burned and looted property, but called them isolated incidents by a handful of soldiers. Rai says the Army has taken steps in the last few days to professionalize the Army, making them more aware of their obligations and to remind them of their mandate as government soldiers.
The accusations are serious. We have taken the accusations seriously. We have taken the accusations positively, and we have taken steps to ensure that these accusations in the next future do not repeat themselves. And in this case, we have been calling upon anybody who might be wronged by SPLA to come forward, because it is not the entire Army that is entertaining, that is condoning acts of impunity.
The report comes one day after the United Nations said that there has been at least 120 cases of rape and violence against civilians in South Sudan since the beginning of the fighting that erupted almost 3 weeks ago in Juba. Fakih says it's no surprise that these types of violations have continued because the people who are responsible are still in power. One witness in Lair County told Amnesty International that the uniforms the soldiers were wearing were, quote, the one for Salva Kiir. Fakih says the trend of impunity in South Sudan on the leaders responsible for the violence lends to the cycle of violence.
These people are still in positions where they can command troops to commit atrocities, where they are sending a message to troops that rape and abduction is something that is not going to be punished. Until we have leaders that are going to punish their troops and ensure that their troops are not committing these types of violations, they're going to continue.
The August peace deal paved the way for the creation of a hybrid court that would try alleged perpetrators of war crimes and crimes against humanity during the 2.5-year conflict. Fakih says violence has persisted throughout the country due largely to the fact that both sides know there is complete impunity when attacks are committed against civilians. She says there is an urgency to establish the hybrid court.
Again, I think there is no excuse for inaction. The violations have been well documented, and it really is time for the African Union to show leadership and state that they are not going to allow these types of violations to continue on the continent. There can be no question about who is responsible for these abuses. There can be no question that they are taking place. The only question that remains is, why are they failing to act?
Earlier this month, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged the 15-member Security Council to impose an arms embargo and targeted sanctions on South Sudan. The African Union has also approved a move to send a regional force into the country to curb the violence. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization is appealing for $109 million to help farmers in southern Africa hard hit by drought. In just a few weeks, farmers will start getting their land ready for planting. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The FAO says 23 million people in southern Africa urgently need support to produce enough food to feed themselves. FAO Senior Technical Officer Neil Marsland explains why.
It's very serious. Basically, what's happened is that there's been two consecutive droughts in the region. The most recent one, the El Niño-induced drought, basically is the worst one in about 35 years in the region. And it's led to very poor harvest, which is going to hugely increase the number of food insecure people in the region.
The lack of rain has driven up the price of staple foods, such as maize. And food security is at risk, so are livelihoods.
Many families have lost important assets. Livestock deaths have been very high. Lots of migration taking place, people resorting to very extreme coping strategies. So it's a very serious situation indeed.
To have any chance for a successful harvest, farmers in southern Africa need to get seeds in the ground by October. Marsland says the $109 million FAO prepared response plan will focus on families worst hit by drought in the rural areas.
The main priorities for now are providing seeds, tools and fertilisers for the upcoming planting season, because in southern Africa, you've only got one rainy season and it normally begins around about November. So in order for farmers to plant seeds, we need to, as FAO, be able to get the seeds to the farmers through our partner agencies so they can plant in time for the upcoming season.
The response plan also includes livestock support, such as vaccinations, emergency feeding, and bringing in new animals to replace those lost.
If we miss this next main cropping season, then we're looking at a protracted livelihood crisis, really, in southern Africa, because if we miss it, then the numbers of people who are currently in need of food aid and other forms of humanitarian assistance will essentially grow, and the farmers that we want to support will not be able to recover, and we'll be looking at a continuation of a humanitarian crisis towards the middle of 2018.
The FAO response plan covers 10 countries: Lesotho, Madagascar, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, South Africa, Swaziland, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The World Meteorological Organization says a La Niña event may develop later this year, but this weather phenomenon, which ushers in cooler temperatures, will have no long-lasting impact on climate change. Lisa Schlein reports from WMO headquarters in Geneva.
The El Niño-La Niña weather phenomenon has worldwide regional impacts on rainfall and temperature on a seasonal scale. El Niño causes a warming of the tropical eastern and central sea surface temperatures in the Pacific Ocean and is characterized by warmer temperatures. Indeed, the strong 2015-16 El Niño that ended in May broke all temperature records for the first 6 months of the year, putting 2016 on track to be the hottest year on record. La Niña has the opposite effect. The World Meteorological Organization says La Niña causes large-scale cooling of the ocean surface temperatures in the central and eastern equatorial Pacific, which tends to cool the atmosphere slightly. WMO's Climate Prediction and Adaption Branch head Max Dilley tells VOA, next year is unlikely to set any heat records if a La Niña does occur later this year.
This doesn't mean global warming isn't happening anymore if it's not the hottest year on record. These are just slight adjustments to the global temperature that occur due to this oscillation between El Niño and La Niña. So if a La Niña occurs, we might see just a little bit of an attenuation of what we have been seeing, which is record temperatures year after year after year globally.
WMO says the world now is in a neutral phase, but there is a 50 to 65% probability that La Niña will develop in the third quarter of 2016 and last through the end of the year. Meteorologists say La Niña, which brings above-average rain, is likely to offer relief to drought-stricken areas, including South Asia, Eastern Australia, Southern and Eastern Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Party convention is a critical part of the American electoral process. VOA correspondents are there reporting the latest developments.
Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Tune in to VOA's extensive, up-to-the-minute coverage of the U.S. presidential election.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.